Welcome to the FMC Technologies first quarter earnings analyst call. My name is Christine, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Brad Alexander. Mr. Brad Alexander, you may begin.
Thank you, Christine. Good morning and welcome to FMC Technologies' first quarter 2014 earnings conference call. Our news release and financial statements issued yesterday can be found on our website. I would like to caution you with respect to any forward-looking statements made during this call. Although these forward-looking statements are based on our current expectations, beliefs, and assumptions regarding future developments and business conditions, they are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these statements. Known material factors that could cause our actual results to differ from our projected results are described in our 10-K, 10-Q, and other filings with the SEC. We wish to caution you not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements which speak only as of the date hereof. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any of our forward-looking statements after the date they are made, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to John Grubb, FMC Technologies Chairman, President, and CEO.
Good morning. Welcome to our first quarter 2014 conference call. With me today is Marianne Seaman, our Chief Financial Officer. I'll discuss highlights from the quarter, Marianne will provide specifics on our financial performance, and then we'll open up the call for your questions. Earnings were 57 cents per diluted share for the quarter. Total company quarterly revenue was $1.8 billion, and operating profit was $245 million. Subsea Technologies recorded a strong level of inbound orders in the quarter, totaling $1.9 billion, which included 16 subsea trees. Segment backlog now stands at $6.8 billion. Revenue for the quarter in Subsea Technologies was $1.2 billion, an increase of 10% over the prior year quarter. As projected, our subsea margins were down sequentially, but increased from the first quarter of 2013. We expect this trend of improving margins to continue through the remainder of the year as both our execution and margins in backlog continue to improve. Our subsea inbound included the Jangkrik Subsea System Award in Indonesia for ENI. The total value of this award could exceed $700 million. We also recorded the inbound for BP's Shah Deniz project in Azerbaijan late in the quarter. The Shah Deniz award includes four subsea manifolds, associated controls and connection equipment, and is valued at more than $300 million. We remain confident in our expectation of receiving more than $5 billion of subsea awards in 2014 and subsea orders exceeding our subsea revenue. Given our company's exposure to deep water, I want to address the outlook for future subsea activity and growth. Clearly, the pressure to improve returns and demonstrate more capital discipline has driven the E&P companies to look at their development plans differently. What is not different is their commitment to developing their extensive deepwater opportunities. The recent as well as historical discovery success in deepwater explains why deepwater development is so important. Over the past 6 years, more than half of new reserve discoveries were in deepwater. And last year, 9 of the 10 largest discoveries were in deepwater. Today, deepwater exploration success has led to a record inventory of undeveloped deepwater discoveries. Half of new oil production is expected to come from deepwater. For many IOCs, certain large independents, and NOCs like Statoil and Petrobras, more than 50% of their new production will come from deepwater. The focus now is to improve the returns associated with developing and producing these discovered reserves. I believe there's real confidence that the returns can be improved, and it's being demonstrated by the continued strong outlook for deepwater development activity. We believe tree awards, excluding Petrobras, will increase year over year. and the announcement of several major subsea project awards early this year, including the industry's record-largest subsea award, also supports the confidence. The need to improve capital returns on these deepwater projects has created an opportunity for our company to provide standardized solutions that can both lower development costs and accelerate first oil production. Our success in standardization has helped several of our partners achieve industry-leading returns on the most challenging deepwater projects. We expect more operators to adopt a similar approach to their field development. Our technology and experience in improving operator returns over the life of the field is what drives our subsea processing and service technology development. These new technologies not only reduce cost, but improve production and recovery rates, all of which contribute to improved returns. Now let me return to the results for the quarter. Subsea services activity delivered positive results despite the seasonal slowdown in the North Sea and two of our light well intervention stacks being out of service while receiving their five-year recertification. We experienced strong sales in the first quarter, driven by activity in all the basins, particularly the Gulf of Mexico. We expect growth in subsea service revenue to outpace our traditional subsea project businesses. The significant growth in subsea awards over the past 2 years has raised subsea supplier backlogs to record levels and continues to support a positive pricing environment. 2014 is poised to be another strong year for the subsea industry. West Africa should be stronger year over year, while other regions, including the Gulf of Mexico, the North Sea, and Asia Pacific, remain at solid levels. Early indications are that the market in 2015 should remain strong as operators continue to focus on developing their deepwater portfolios. Our surface technology segment reported solid results with both strong orders and revenue in the first quarter. Our international surface wellhead business continued to deliver solid performance, and this included a significant order from Pemex. North America orders increased in the quarter. Fluid Control was able to convert some of these orders into revenue as operators restocked their depleted inventories. This activity positively impacted the segment margins. Looking forward, the subsea market remains healthy, as recent subsea awards early in the year demonstrated. With significant portfolios of deepwater opportunities, we believe operators will continue to develop these discoveries. Our technologies, capacity, and experience position us to help our clients improve deepwater returns through lowering cost, improving production and recovery rates, and reducing lead times. Margin in our subsea backlog have been improving for the last 2 years. And with industry capacity tight, we expect this to continue throughout 2014. In surface technologies, we see improving results in the North America market, while we continue to expect our international surface wellhead business to perform at record levels. Overall, we believe we positioned ourselves to deliver better results from all of our businesses and continue to be a leader in the markets we serve. Marianne will now take you through some of the financial details for the quarter.
Thanks, John. Our operations performed well in the first quarter. Subsea Technologies operating profit was $142 million in the quarter, with a margin of 11.8%. Subsea Technologies operating margins improved 290 basis points year over year, with operating profit increasing 45%. Sequentially, margins were down as forecasted. This is due in part to the recertification of two light well intervention stacks, which takes them out of operation, and the seasonal impact of the North Sea service work. As expected, both stacks returned to service in the second quarter. The year-over-year operating profit improvement reflects better margin projects flowing from our backlog and increased service activity in the Gulf of Mexico, as the timing of activity in this region was favorable. It also reflects the progress made toward overall improved execution and the cost reductions that resulted from lower headcount in the Eastern region. Headcount reductions that occurred in our Eastern region resulted in severance charges, as we indicated would happen last quarter. We should benefit from these actions through the remainder of the year and see quarterly margin improvement in the next three quarters. Moving to our surface technology results, Surface Technology operating profit for the first quarter was $88 million, a 53% increase from the prior year quarter. Margins in the quarter were 18.3%. North American fluid control orders were stronger than we initially anticipated. The improved sales related to repair and replacement as operators restocked their inventories. This activity was weighted toward the back half of the quarter. Our international surface wellhead business continued to perform well as activity grew year over year. Our backlog growth supports the strong revenue performance that we expect to continue through the year. We expect Surface Technologies' second quarter margins to decline sequentially due to our Canadian exposure. Third quarter margins are expected to recover. The sustainability of fluid control activity we experienced in the quarter is difficult to gauge, but land activity growth has provided us with greater confidence of delivering full-year segment margins around 16%, which was the high end of our previous full-year guidance range. Orders for Surface Technologies for the quarter were $27 million, as both surface wellhead and fluid control delivered year-over-year growth. Backlog exiting the quarter stands at a record $790 million for this segment. This supports our continued confidence in our full-year revenue and operating income growth expectations. Energy infrastructure operating income for the first quarter was $16 million with a margin of 10.7%. This was primarily due to our measurement solutions and loading systems businesses. We recently announced our intent to divest our material handling business from the energy infrastructure segment. We expect this transaction to be completed in the second quarter. We have excluded estimated earnings from the business as well as the anticipated gain from its sale in our full-year earnings guidance. Let me turn to the corporate items. Corporate expense in the quarter was $14.9 million. We expect this expense to be approximately $15 million per quarter throughout 2014. Other revenue and expense net reflects expense of $19.7 million. We expect this to average $18 to $20 million per quarter in 2014, subject to foreign currency fluctuations. Included in our full-year estimates and guidance is expense of $21 million, or 6 cents per share associated with the pension plan de-risking, the majority of which will be incurred in the fourth quarter. Our first quarter tax rate was 33.2%, which reflects a different mix of earnings than we previously expected. We now anticipate our 2013 tax rate to be between 32 and 34% for the full year. Capital spending this quarter was $92 million, primarily directed towards Subsea Technologies expansion initiatives. We expect capital spending in 2014 to be approximately $400 million. At the end of the first quarter, we had net debt of $1.1 billion, comprised of $290 million of cash and $1.4 million of debt. We averaged 237.8 million diluted shares outstanding in the quarter, and we repurchased 899,000 shares of stock during the quarter at an average cost of $50.98 per share. So in summary, subsea margins in the quarter were improved from last year. We are executing better, and the orders we are converting have better margins. We are also seeing the benefits of our cost reduction initiatives. First quarter subsea margins for Surface Technologies were strong as our international surface wellhead business continues to perform well, and we saw sales activity in North America fluid control increase in the latter part of the quarter. Looking forward, our guidance range of $2.55 to $2.75 excludes the material handling business from our energy infrastructure segment going forward and the anticipated gain we expect to recognize associated with its sale. This range also includes the cost associated with our pension de-risking. We are confident that our subsea revenue and orders will exceed $5 billion in 2014. We continue to expect subsea margins to improve as we progress through the year and continue to forecast Subsea Technologies margins to average between 13 and 14% for the full year. Surface Technologies margins should be around 16%, the top end of our previous guidance for 2014, as full-year North America activity should come in near the high end of our previous expectations. So with a solid start to the year, we have increased confidence in our ability to deliver these full-year results. Operator, you may now open up the call for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. Our first question comes from Robin Shoemaker from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning, Robin.
I wanted to start with Surface and the restocking that you cited that occurred late in the quarter, which clearly helped the result. Is that an early sign of recovery? In other words, it had been quite depressed, so does it continue? Do you continue to see that phenomenon in the second quarter? And with the ongoing increase in the rig count, and how would you expect that to play out if it is a restocking? When would they be restocked, I guess?
Well, Robin, it's certainly a good sign. I'm not sure yet if it's an early sign. Our fluid control business is one step back in the supply chain, and so we need to be a little bit careful about how the pressure pumpers are going to flow the orders through. But it's certainly a good sign. I'm not sure yet if it's an early sign. What we want to do is see a couple more months, a couple more quarters where that level of activity exists, and then I think we'd be in a position to call it an early sign and realize that it's sustainable. But right now, I think it's just a good sign, not necessarily an early sign. You know, we're encouraged by the pressure pumper's optimism. No question about that. We just want to make sure that that's materializing in a steady stream of higher level of activity to fluid control.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the 16%, the upper level that you had guided or was the upper end of your guidance, that looks like an achievable number for this year based on what you're seeing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And on the just wanted to go back to the issue was discussed at the beginning of the year on your call about the backlog conversion in subsea this year. Do you still expect it to be lower than it normally is at around the 50% level for 2014?
Yes, we do. Historically it's been around 60. We've been pretty consistent in saying it would be lower than that in 2014, primarily driven by the multi-year Petrobras order, which doesn't flow through the P&L in a year or a year and a half. It flows over 4 years. So, yes, more in the 50 range for 2014. But then as we get into 2016, we'd start to see it approach the 60% level that we've historically had.
Okay. Good. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Bill Herbert from Simmons & Company. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. John, I was curious about your observation that the early look into 2015 with regard to tree orders looks encouraging. I'm just curious as to how you think about the business for the next, call it, 2 or 3 years, if you will. Record backlog of deep water discoveries, continued resilience with regard to IOC and deep water, and I see prosecution of deep water developments, notwithstanding all the negative rhetoric. Also, you just right-size your business in the eastern region as well. For planning purposes, are we thinking about kind of an annualized tree award world of what, like 400 per annum going forward? How do you think about that?
The way we think about it, and let me just take the real high level for a minute, Bill, and it was in my prepared remarks, the number of undeveloped discoveries in inventory is a record level. And in every conversation that we have with the operators, it's their intent to develop that portfolio. And we need to help them do that by working on improving returns. I think the way I look at it in the future is that that's going to be accomplished. I mean, you look at the Total Block 32 Kaombo project, it's almost a poster child for here's a huge project that could have been problematic in terms of cost, local content in Angola, and yet that project was able to be reworked and looked at in a different way fairly quickly and to be allowed to proceed with good returns and be awarded early this year. And I think that's what's going to happen going forward, is that this inventory or portfolio of deepwater discoveries will be those that are challenged in terms of the returns will be reworked, and the operators will proceed to develop their discoveries. Now, what will the number look like? I think if you took the 500 or so trees that we had last year, you back out the 180 for Petrobras, you get to a 400 range, and then going forward, we'll see growth of that 400 in the high single-digit range going forward. And that matches up nicely with the number of deepwater discoveries that need to be developed and production increases and so forth. And that's how we envision it going forward over the next two or three years. And that's in turn, you mentioned a little bit about our capacity. And that's what we've planned for, is that kind of growth going forward. And, you know, based on the 2014 results, the list of named projects, major projects in 2015, it supports that kind of high single-digit growth off of a base of 400 trees going forward.
Okay. That's very helpful, if not encouraging. Marianne, with regard to fluid control and surface in general, just given what happened to surface margins, which were considerably better than I think most expected, is it safe to say that fluid control revenues grew by something along 20 to 30% year over year?
Yeah. Hi, Bill. Yes. So fluid control, as you know, our fourth quarter, you know, we saw a little bit of weakness last year, and we're a little conservative kind of going into the first quarter. But we certainly saw, as I said, in the latter part of that quarter, fluid control improving. So yeah, we saw double-digit growth there in the fluid control top line. We're a little conservative, I would say, in terms of, as John said, what that will be for the rest of the year. We'd like to be able to see, some continuation of that before we get too aggressive in the back half of the year. But we saw strong growth year over year in double digits.
And so given the improvement in North American revenues and operating income going forward, I know it's early, but I'm just curious with regard to 15, how should we think about the tax rate? High 20s, low 30s, where would a sort of prudent analyst be, I guess, positioned on the tax rate front for next year?
Yeah, so, you know, as you heard me say, we're looking at a slight tick up this year, and it's largely driven by earnings mix. You know, there's a couple of tax changes that are going on, Europe, U.S., but, you know, probably somewhere in that low 30s, just depending on how we see that mix going forward, would be where I would suggest a prudent analyst look at that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jim Crandall from Cowen. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
John, with the alliance between Baker Hughes and Aker announced just recently to develop technology for subsea production, with now two of your customers now forming alliances, in your opinion, is it becoming more likely that the industry is going that route and that FMC will have to respond in some way to that?
Tim, I think what is most likely is the subsea production companies will respond to the need by the industry to optimize subsea production systems, lower costs, improve production and recovery rates. And that is what's likely. How we go about doing it, I think, may differ by company to company. Forming alliance, I think, is a good idea, not necessarily with an oil field service company, but maybe the way that we view it is by forming alliances to achieve that with our customers, the operators. And we've been pretty successful in using those alliances with the operators to define and develop the new technology that's required to improve subsea production system efficiency, deal with the challenge of improving production and recovery rates, lowering the life of field costs. And I think it's using those relationships that's been the foundation of our company's strategy, which is to develop the technologies the E&P companies need, develop the subsea processing capability to help improve recovery rates, and to develop the expanded subsea services, including RIGERS light well intervention, so operators can cost-effectively go back into interventions and boost recovery. And it's worked for us. It's what's allowed us and created our leadership position in both subsea processing and subsea services. So I think, rather, is it likely that more of these kinds of relationships that we see with oil field service companies? Not in our case. What is more likely is that we will even more aggressively pursue developing the technologies that the operators need, expanding our leadership position in subsea processing, and expanding our position in subsea services. So for us, I think we'll pursue that option much more aggressively than some other kind of alliance to achieve the same thing.
Okay, that's a thoughtful response, John. Thank you for that. As a follow-up, you've spoken, I think, on the last call about that for many subsea projects that there was becoming only two companies involved in the bidding and sort of even the pre-engineering stage. And, you know, given that that is already happening, is it disappointing to you to miss the large Kaombo order, or is there so much business out there, the fact that a competitor will probably be, you know, really preoccupied with this major project, that capacity of he and then maybe another company will be full, and it just increases your optimism on pricing going forward?
Right. Well, first of all, as I think I mentioned earlier, the order, the combo order, actually is very positive for the industry, because it says the industry, on fairly short order, in short order, is able to rework projects, boost the returns, and proceed. So to have the industry's largest subsea production order, $2+ billion, in West Africa, get awarded so, really, by historical standards, so swiftly, is a real positive for the industry. And it's a good example of I think, what we can expect to happen in the future. Now, to answer your question more directly, are we disappointed? First of all, we were very interested in the Block 32 Kaombo project. Why? Because we are the primary supplier to Total. We've delivered most of the, not all, but many of the Total projects in West Africa. We have the highest level of local content in Angola, and we were extremely well positioned. Plus, I think we had the most demonstrated available capacity to handle such a significant order. Remember, that's 65 trees with the first deliveries in just next year. That's a huge task, and I think our company was probably really the best positioned to accomplish that. So we saw a lot of things in our favor and would very much have liked to participate in Kaombo. But we also realized that the market, certainly coming off of two extraordinary years, 2012 and 2013, and then strong order outlook for 14 and 15, we realized that the market was going to continue to be tight, and filling up our backlog, our available capacity, with a project that maybe the margins weren't as good as we envisioned they can be in the future wouldn't be a wise choice. So we were not willing to accept to fill up our backlog at less than optimal margins that we think are available in the market today. And the results, so it's disappointing, but we have many other options to continue to grow our business. And this will, in fact, I think, at least two of arguably the most aggressive subsea suppliers now are very, very loaded, and the award of the Block 32 to one of them makes that situation even more solid. So I think going forward, the competitive pricing environment will continue to be positive as a result of this award.
Okay, very good. Thank you, John.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Byron Pope from Tudor Pickering Holt. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Even with the two notable subsea projects that you mentioned in your prepared remarks at FTI-1, your subsea inbound in Q1 was still fairly healthy. So, John, I was just wondering if you could speak to some of the offshore theaters that are driving some of the subsea demand that we don't necessarily see in the high-profile subsea projects.
Right, Byron. The strong unannounced projects were driven, as they usually are, through our alliance partners, a lot from the Gulf of Mexico. You know, the size of the Gulf of Mexico projects, because it's not a production sharing contract environment and so forth, tend to be a little bit smaller. They tend to be more step-outs because of the existing infrastructure. So I think the unannounced inbound for the first quarter looked pretty much like our usual suspects. Partner awards, Gulf of Mexico awards, and then follow-on projects, some of which were in West Africa, of projects that we had already won. So, and then, as Marianne pointed out, pretty strong subsea services, despite the fact we didn't have recertification. So we had the two stacks being recertified. So strong subsea service, a lot of smallish awards from our partners, strong Gulf of Mexico, and then follow-on business from big projects we had previously won internationally.
Okay. And then in thinking about subsea services, it sounded like the Gulf of Mexico was particularly healthy on the subsea services side. As you think through where to deploy that fourth light well intervention stack, it seemed as though you guys were looking at the Deepwater Golden Triangle. At this point, just given the health of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, are you leaning toward that fourth vessel coming to the Gulf as opposed to West Africa or Brazil?
Byron, it's going to go whoever signs the first contract for us. But I think you're on the right track that we've had a number of really important conversations with operators in the Gulf of Mexico who are very interested. So Gulf of Mexico is certainly a likely candidate. But that four stack is going to go in the wherever we can get our first contract.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ole Slower from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Could you remind us again, how many trees did you say that you booked in the first quarter?
16.
So 16 trees. And you mentioned that the Kiomba of $2 billion was 65 trees. Yes, you booked $2 billion on 16 trees. So could you discuss a little bit the nature of your backlog? I mean, there seems to be something going on here which disconnects your business from trees.
Well, our business has been disconnected for trees for several years now. When we moved to become a full subsea system supplier and to strengthen our ability to develop manifolds and the connection systems, that's really where we sort of pulled away from trees being kind of the governor of our inbound activity. And you can see that over maybe the last four or five, well, maybe even longer than that, 5 or 6 years, where the revenue per tree has consistently grown. And I think the first quarter was a really good example of that. I'll give you a specific. As you know, we have a frame agreement with BP, the Big Shot and East projects. We've been working with BP on for a long time. BP also has a frame agreement with OneSubsea. They chose, and I think wisely, chose to split up that project because it's so large and critical to them. And the tree award, these are more repetitive trees. I think probably maybe something that the OneSubsea, they felt OneSubsea would be more interested in. And then the more technically complex manifold system is what went to us. And so we got, as I think was pointed out in the comments, well in excess of $300 million from BP Shah Deniz for the manifolds and connection system with no trees associated with them. And that's, you know, that's been a pattern. You see the same thing in Petrobras where the bulk of Petrobras's manifold requirements come to FMC, again, driving the revenue per tree number up. That's what's going on here.
So is this a way out of kilter here in the first quarter, or is this a fair kind of estimate of what we should expect going forward? And we're talking about revenue per tree, but it's not really revenue per tree. It's different streams of revenues than as trees.
Exactly. That's why I think we have to probably stop talking about revenue per tree.
I mean, every single analyst on your call has seemed to be oodling on about how many trees they're going to book. Could you talk about really what's going on in your business?
Yeah. It's less about trees, and it's more about subsea systems, and that's where the revenue in the first quarter showed that. It is a little out of kilter to win a $300-plus million project manifolds only. That's unusual, and that's because BP chose to separate the trees from the manifold on the award. Normally, you wouldn't see that. Normally, you'd see the entire infrastructure, the entire project, trees and infrastructure being awarded to one supplier. So I think the first quarter was a little bit unusual.
Turning to subsea processing, a year ago, we called around most of your potential customers, and there seemed to be sort of a wait-and-see attitude towards using this technology. What is your sense now in terms of new customer adoption rate, people looking at it?
Right. I think we've moved beyond wait-and-see. I think most of the operators have adopted this technology, some a little faster than others, of course, but most of them have adopted it. When you look at the operators, from 2014, 2015, and beyond, who have named projects where they're considering, it is across the board. It is virtually all of the IOCs and a significant number of the independents, even some of the smaller ones that are operating in the Gulf of Mexico, are now not just considering, but are including subsea processing alternatives in their design concepts for developing their deepwater fields. The pace of awards for processing is now less about adoption rates and more about a natural, if you will, lag time from when you are starting to consider subsea processing an alternative in your design select phase of a deepwater development, which can precede an actual tender and award by 3 years. That's what's happening. And I think that's why in 2013 and maybe even in 2014, you're going to see maybe a more modest number of subsea processing projects. But then as we look out to 15 and 16, you see that lag time start to catch up and the number of projects start to increase. I think that's what we're dealing with here is a natural lag time, but not so much an adoption rate.
Brazil is a hot topic at the moment. The drilling activity has gone down a lot year over year. Could you talk a little bit about but workover activity and other activity, completion activities, if they're really picking up. So what are you seeing in Brazil when it comes to some of these new technologies? Is that a focus area, or is it all about trees in pre-salt?
Petrobras has a long-term vision in terms of developing technology. We're working closely with them to help develop those new technologies. So they do have a longer-term vision that we're actively working on something like four or five very specific projects with Sempus, the R&D arm of Petrobras, to develop these new technologies. But it's very forward-thinking. They're talking about technologies that will be required in 2020. In the short term, Petrobras is very focused on proceeding with pre-salt. I think they are just moving forward with pre-salt. Included, I think, in some of our inbound was more subsea manifold work, fell below the threshold. They are proceeding with acquiring the hardware that they need to develop pre-salt, and I'd say that's where their focus is right now. But in terms of technology, nothing is stalled. It's just further out.
So the sort of Marlin Sewell pilots, et cetera, despite being very successful, that kind of activity is just put on the back burner at the moment?
I think it is on the back burner, but it's not on the back burner because the technology is proven. The pilot on Marlin was a success. They proceeded with their evaluation as how to apply it in the campus basin. And now I think it's in the larger Brazil capital priorities. Do they put their attention on pre-salt, on boosting production from the more conventional fields? I think the implementation of the Marlin activity is in the middle of that prioritization by Petrobras right now. And that's kind of beyond my view as to when it'll move up in the priorities.
And sorry, just one last one. You mentioned we've been through a capital freeze by the IOCs, and that's never good news. But there's a lot of pressure on how to lower costs, as you correctly highlight. But it's not just negotiating with rigging companies, or it's also negotiating with governments. So can you give us a little bit of your view on how this is going to get resolved? I mean, you mentioned Kiomba, and maybe you said as an example, what is it exactly that happened that made this project suddenly go from being not so attractive to very attractive?
Well, you know, the stuff that's been in the press is they were on this, you know, $15 to $20 billion project, they were $3 to $5 billion over their original plans, which hurt the returns. And they went back and re-looked at their approach on using FPSOs, and they're using existing refurbished tankers to do the FPSO, which took a couple billion dollars out of the project. They did some de-scoping on the subsea production system, which took some money out. And then they renegotiated with the national oil company on the level of local content, and that took some money out. That's what I know. There's probably other things that they did to rework that project that took something like $3 to $5 billion out of the project and made the returns acceptable. And, you know, I wasn't as close to that one. I mean, that's just what's in the press. But I am closer to BP's Mad Dog because we're a partner with Mad Dog, and the same thing seems to be occurring there where they're reworking their development plans, the number of wells that they drill. They're revising their specifications off to a more standard FMC industry spec as opposed to a unique BP spec. And it's having a fairly dramatic effect on the capital that they'll spend, and it's boosting returns. And my understanding is BP is considering FID on Mad Dog later this year as a result of reworking that project. So these are just two examples. One I'm a little more familiar with the other, but they're happening pretty fast. And I think they are demonstrating, which was in my prepared remarks, that they're good examples of how the industry is addressing the pressure they're under to improve returns, yet still proceed to develop their extensive deepwater portfolio.
So they're not asking you to lower price.
Well, they, you know,
let me rephrase it. Are they asking you for price, or are they asking you for technology?
Well, the problem with the price, in our case, because we're dealing mostly with our partners, they have visibility of what our margins are, and they know that they can't get the returns to where they be just by squeezing our margins. And I think there's a really good understanding of that, and we're not spending a lot of our time on shrinking the price, because we know we can't get there, and there's a much, much more productive discussion, Uli, that is taking place. And every one of our partners, and even some of our non-partners, have come to our company and said, John, how can we adopt more industry standards as opposed to our unique company standards and specs? And if we were to adopt industry standards, how much could we save? Or, maybe more importantly, how much could we reduce the lead times? One of the best ways to improve a return on a deepwater project is accelerate your first oil date. And that's the conversation that we're having with Statoil, with BP, with Anadarko, with Shell. Virtually every E&P company that we deal with, that's the conversation. There's been some terrific movement by the operators to adopting our standard and not only reducing their costs but improving their lead times. That's the conversation, not about reducing our price.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Bill Sanchez from Howard Weil. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Marion, I want to just come back to the subsea margin outlook here and just think about 1Q. I'm assuming that it probably came in a little bit better than what y'all's expectations were given the headwinds around, you know, the downtime on the light well interventions and the restructuring you guys are doing in the eastern region. How do we think about 2Q margins here? Is 4Q13 probably a pretty good bogey in terms of that recovery? And, you know, was there less negative impact that you guys saw in 1Q? Does any of that bleed into 2Q, or is it just you had a much better mix here on the sales side during the quarter?
Hey, Bill. So, you know, sequentially, Q2 of this year, we expect to be improved over Q1. You know, not a bad place to look at Q4, but keep in mind, remember, Q4, when we talk about it, we had that $24 million tax adjustment. So, you know, if you want to if you allow me to exclude that tax adjustment, which was favorable. You know, in terms of your question about kind of a shifting, we saw strength in the first quarter coming out of the Gulf of Mexico and in part in services. You know, we're optimistic, but, you know, we're not sure whether it's just timing right now. So, you know, first quarter was probably a little bit better than what we thought, but from a full year perspective, back half will be strong, stronger than the first half, but sequentially second quarter up from the first quarter in a meaningful way, obviously, as we don't have the cost of the severance, we don't have the recertification, and we bring the North Sea back and the two intervention stacks.
Okay, so I think a 4Q kind of clean margin was around 13.5%. That's probably not a bad starting point, Marianne.
You got a good memory, Bill.
Okay. I guess just one follow-up. I know in terms of the guidance staying intact, yet we have this material handling product sale. Fair to think about that, Marianne, in terms of just, you know, the earnings beat here that you guys had in 1Q kind of matches or offsets the loss of that earnings from that business?
Yeah, so we got two things going, as you know. You're absolutely right. We have excluded the estimated profitability from material handling, assuming the sale goes through as we expect. And as I mentioned, we're looking at a slightly higher tax rate. So, we are cautiously optimistic, as I mentioned, about our ability, given the strength of the fourth quarter, the strength of the first quarter, top end of the guidance there. When we think about subsea technologies, as we look at this, a lot of things going well. You know, we certainly have more things that need to go well, but a lot of things that we've been talking about are going well, so we should be at the top end of that subsea technologies margin guidance. And similarly, and we think about surface as well.
I guess just one more, just on just the surface technologies, you know, called out in the quarter here in North America, strength. Was there anything related to new products or new pressure pumping related equipment, or is this just all existing, you know, existing capacity that's just, again, looking for refurbs and upgrades here?
Yeah, Bill. No new products. It's existing and existing equipment with refurbs and replacement, but no new products. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. I'll turn it back.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Anderson from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
So, John, you've been talking about standardization as a key for improving returns for a bit now, but it seems like it is starting to catch on. I was just curious on your outlook for kind of 14 and 15 subsea trees. Is that a material driver, do you think, as in kind of incremental orders? Obviously, we've seen a lot of delays out there in offshore development projects. Is that something, do you think, they can kind of move that forward? Because I'm just kind of curious that we already booked about 40% of your kind of full-year number in first quarter as you're looking out. I'm just wondering, can the standardization kind of drive that higher this year, or is that kind of a little bit more of a longer-term goal for you?
Well, I view standardization primarily as the opportunity to help the operators improve the returns and improve execution. And we're at a very unique position here. We've been talking about standardization, well, as long as I've been in the business, so for decades. But getting a lot of operators to actually move on that clearly has been a challenge. Because of the pressure that they are under to improve returns, for the first time, it really feels like some of the operators are really serious about adopting industry standards, and that creates an opportunity for FMC because of our size and scale and the work that we've done in standardizing our product offering. We're in a really good position to take advantage of the situation right now and push standards to operators who in the past have not used them. And you know, as I mentioned in my earlier remarks, I mean, it's compelling. It can make a material difference in cost and the ability to execute and improve returns. So I think it's a real opportunity for our company to protect our market leadership position by promoting these standards. Now, is it, you know, incremental tree awards for the industry or for us? Well, it is, to the extent that standardization is part of the solution for making some of these subsea projects have more acceptable returns. But I think for us it's more really cementing and protecting and sustaining our market leadership position because we can use these standards to our advantage, to our competitive advantage in the market.
Now, for some, standardization might imply weaker pricing. Can you talk about that, and does that actually really mean better margins, or how should we think about kind of standardization as it relates to profitability going forward?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about standardizing on our standard. So mm-hmm. it's not there's nothing in it about weaker margins, and I think in fact it's just the opposite. When you look at our ability to execute, we execute better when we're executing on our standard product line. So I think in terms of better execution, to the extent that that does obviously improve the net margins, I think it's better.
Okay. And my last quick follow-up here, there's been some chatter about kind of changing local content requirements in West Africa. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Kind of, I heard there were some changes on the Block 32 award. Does this have any? How does this impact FMC? Does this have any impact on the AGENA project, or is that already kind of signed, sealed, and we're moving on from that?
Right. Well, it has no impact on the AGENA project. That's done. We're actually well prepared for developing assembling the trees in country and as well as doing a lot of the fabrication. So yeah, that's no impact at all. That's done. I would be very careful about looking at the Kaomba situation and saying that local content is going to reverse itself. Local content remains a very, very important aspect for the national oil companies. And I think you just look at the size of Block 32 and maybe the uniqueness around that. They were able to get some adjustments to the local content requirement. But I'd be careful about thinking about that's a trend. How does it affect our company? Either way, it's fine. I mean, we've managed to excel at developing real, legitimate local content in challenging places. It's become a competitive advantage of ours. We've won a number of awards simply because the National Oil Company favored us because we had the highest level of local content, and we're gonna maintain that position. If the local content requirements are backed off at all, I don't think that'll impact us one way or the other. But I don't see them going away. It's too important for the national oil companies.
Great. Thanks, John.
Good.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michael Lamott from Guggenheim. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good morning. I'd first like to follow up on David's observation of 40% of your backlog guidance having been booked in the first quarter. And maybe, John, if I could ask you to speculate on what could happen that to take that $5 billion number higher this year.
Well, first of all, we're pleased that we've got almost $2 billion in the first quarter. That sets things up nice, but it's also because those two very large projects fortunately happened to fall earlier in the year, which is the way we like it, because now it helps us on our conversion rate of those projects through the P&L. So that's a good thing. Right now, obviously with the $2 billion in the bank, we're pretty confident of the more than $5 billion. What could take it more than $5 billion is really a couple of projects towards the end of the year that involve national oil companies in Africa. And if those were to slip, which, as you know, they're inclined to do, they could easily go into 2015. So, I don't think it's really healthy for us to get too far ahead of ourselves in terms of the possible inbound, when in order to get way above it would require some major project awards late in the year that could very easily slip into 2015. So, I think our guidance of the $5+ billion is right for now. We've got to see how these big projects, a couple other projects that we're looking at, how they where they fall.
Okay. You mentioned that in the first quarter too there was follow-on work from previously awarded projects. What's the cycle time and the visibility of that type of order?
Oh, it's good. I mean, these are our partners. We'd have to wait for the envelope to be opened up to see who's going to win it. They're almost always direct awards to us. So there's quite a bit of visibility.
Okay. So not necessarily a source of further upside in later in the year is where I'm going with that.
No, the upside later in the year will come from the timing of major projects that we've targeted. And if they, stay on schedule and move up a little bit and they land in 2014, then there could be upside. But as you know, they could just as easily and more likely slip to the right and land in 2015.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And if I can ask a question on the surface side as well, it strikes me that the service wellhead business that you've been growing share, particularly overseas, and I just want to ask about the strategy there, the value proposition that you communicate to the customers, and where you're seeing the most notable impact and penetration.
The biggest impact has been in the Middle East. The activity is very strong. The equipment that's used in the Middle East is pretty sophisticated for surface wellhead equipment. It's usually oftentimes it's platform equipment, actually, in the Emirates anyway. And the kind of competition that we experience in North America with a lot of smaller players doesn't exist internationally. They're not qualified. Maybe the barriers to entry are higher. And so the competitive environment is quite a bit different for us internationally, and particularly in the Middle East. And the type of equipment is a little bit more sophisticated, which is also a barrier to entry. We've been operating in the Middle East for a long time, developed really strong relationships with the E&P operators in the Middle East, and that's what's driven our growth, primarily in our international markets.
Great. Thanks, John.
Yep.
Thank you. And our final question is from James Wicklund from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Jim.
The biggest disconnect I have seen in my career seems to be timing between what the financial world thinks and what happens in industry. I'm just curious, how long was Block 32 delayed? You said it was changed quickly, and it was. How long was it delayed?
Boy,
year, 2, 6 months?
No. Actually, Gina was delayed longer than Block 32. I'm thinking back for the last year and a half, we've been calling Kaombo as a potential for 2014.
Okay, well, then
you know, I'm thinking, just a couple of months. And Gina was delayed longer than Kaombo.
Let me ask you a broader question. How long do you think it'll take for the entire deep water supply chain to adjust its cost, efficiencies, and practices, which is what you're doing, to get back to the growth rate we've seen over the last 5 years?
I don't think this is about the supply chain. This is about, and this is why I use those examples of Mad Dog and Kaombo. It wasn't the supply chain that adjusted. It was the operators changing their development approach. It was Total deciding that they were going to use a different approach on the FPSOs. It was BP deciding they were going to use a different approach on the field layout and the number of wells they were going to drill. This is what changed, Jim, not the supply chain.
Okay, so then we can see a much faster change than you'd have to see if you were expecting the supply chain to adjust.
That's my belief.
Okay. Okay, thank you all very much. Appreciate you letting me
You're welcome. Yep, thanks.
Thank you. Would you like to proceed with any closing remarks?
Yes, Christine. This concludes our first quarter conference call. A replay of our call will be available on our website beginning at approximately 2 p.m. Eastern today. We will conduct our second quarter 2014 conference call on July 23rd at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact me. Christine, you may now end the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.